The Guardian.
Guardian Daily. News from The Guardian.
Hello, it's Claire Catford, and this is Guardian Daily for Wednesday, the 27th of August.
I'm here tonight as a proud mother, a proud American, and a proud supporter of Barack Obama.
Suzanne Goldenberg, and I'm at the Democratic Convention in Denver, where I've just heard Hillary Clinton deliver a speech giving a very forceful endorsement of Barack Obama and claiming her place in feminist history.
Also in today's podcast, big challenges for drug enforcement teams as cartels use new routes to bring cocaine to Britain.
These gangs have been forced to change their routes and to get the drugs into Europe via West Africa, which is a more roundabout way.
Apology for Salman Rushdie in court for false claims in a new book about his time under police protection.
One of the claims were that the protection officers got so fed up with him one evening that they locked him in a cupboard so they could go out to the pub.
And Mansfield makes it a hero's welcome for double gold medal winner Rebecca Adlington. But first, a summary of the day's main news and a review of the papers with Sandy Waugh.
Hillary Clinton has put the full weight of her presidential campaign as well as her political career behind Barack Obama in a passionate speech which drew thunderous applause at the Democratic Party's national convention. She commanded the stage in a speech which has won widespread praise.
Whether you voted for me or you voted for Barack, the time is now to unite as a single party with a single purpose. This is a fight for the future, and it's a fight we must win together.
But tensions between the Clinton and Obama camps appear to still remain, with some of her senior campaign team deciding to leave the convention early before Mr. Obama accepts the party's nomination on Thursday night. We'll have more from our team in Denver in just a moment. Other news, Russia's relations with the West have plunged to their most critical point in a generation. It's after the Kremlin officially recognised the breakaway provinces of South Ossetia and Abkhazia as independent states. The move flouts UN Security Council resolutions and dismisses Western insistence that Georgia's territorial integrity and international borders must be respected. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has declared that if his decision meant a new Cold War, then so be it. He's also accused Washington of shipping arms to Georgia under the guise of humanitarian aid. Thousands of people with a devastating eye disease could have their sight saved by a drug now being made available on the NHS. The National Institution for Health and Clinical Excellence has performed a U-turn on the drug Lucentis after draft guidelines were published last year. Age-related macular degeneration is a leading cause of sight loss in the UK. Until recently, it had been suggested patients would have to lose the use of one eye before the other could be treated. Britain will overtake Germany and France to become the biggest country in the EU in 50 years' time. According to population projections just unveiled, demographic trends show Britain's positive birth rate, contrasting strongly with most other large countries in Europe. Eurostat, the statistical service of the European Commission, predicts Britain's population by 2060 will increase by 25% from the current figure of just over 61 million to almost 77 million. This morning's papers now, and Hillary Clinton's speech was delivered too late for the first editions. Instead, many lead with those developments between Russia and Georgia. The Telegraph also looks at a warning from government inspectors on childcare, saying the number of failing childminders in Britain has doubled in the past year, putting the development of thousands of children at risk. The latest line on the credit crunch comes from The Independent, saying it's meant traffic on Britain's major roads has dropped for the first time since congestion was measured. One of the headlines on the front of The Guardian reads, Obama and the case of the rednecks with rifles. It looks at the details of several arrests in the States, which seem to suggest an apparent plot to kill Barack Obama, but the FBI says it couldn't have been pulled off. The Express reports on how 3,000 angry TV viewers have complained about Britain's tacky and embarrassing 8-minute Olympic handover ceremony in Beijing. And the Mail looks at what it calls Jackie Smith's secret police, saying security guards and town hall workers are being armed with sweeping police-style powers, allowing them to hand out on-the-spot fines. More on today's stories and breaking news at guardian.co.uk.
Barack Barack Obama is my candidate, and he must be our president.
I'm Suzanne Goldenberg, and I've just come out of the conference center after hearing Hillary Clinton's speech. This was a make-or-break speech for Hillary Clinton. She had to show that she was fully on side with Barack Obama. And she also had to give her supporters something to take away with them to sort of ease the pain and allow them to come over and join Obama's campaign and work hard for him, because there's a lot of sore feelings still.
I ran for president to renew the promise of America, to rebuild the middle class and sustain the American dream, to provide opportunity to those who are willing to work hard for it and have that work rewarded, to fight for an America that is defined by deep and meaningful equality, from civil rights to labor rights, from women's rights to gay rights, from ending discrimination to promoting unionization.
I think she made the ideological case for Obama. She talked about the importance of sending a Democrat to the White House. She talked about the important issues of her campaign, health care, the economy, and energy, and standing up for the underprivileged. She made clear that she thought that those were the issues of Obama's campaign. She also put her run for the White House in context by saying, you know, that it was an important moment in American feminist history.
My friends, it is time to take back the country we love. And whether you voted for me or you voted for Barack, the time is now to unite as a single party with a single purpose.
I mean, that was the purpose of tonight's speech, is to unite the party. And I think here is where she fell down, because while she sort of told her people, look, it's not about me. Did you support my campaign just for me? No, you supported it for the issues. At no point really did it feel to me, did Hillary Clinton begin to make the character case for Obama? She didn't talk about his personal issues. She didn't say, look, this man has judgment. Look, this man has what it takes to be in the White House. And I think that's an important message that she should have made tonight. I was sitting with the New York delegation, and there were women there who sort of said to me, look, Clinton's campaign was something deeply personal for us. It's not like getting over any other kind of primary defeat or political defeat. This is something that's a disappointment, and it's going to have to take some time to go away. We identified with her so strongly. And then you saw Obama people, you know, Obama supporters saying, look, you know, we liked her too. So there was a lot of emotion flowing there. And when Clinton came into the room in a bright orange pantsuit, her trademark pantsuit now, there was, you know, just a huge wave of emotion there.
We need leaders once again who can tap into that special blend of American confidence and optimism that has enabled generations before us to meet our toughest challenges. Leaders who can help us show ourselves and the world that with our ingenuity, creativity, and innovative spirit, there are no limits to what is possible in America. We need to elect Barack Obama.
There were people in the hall tonight, including many that I talked to, who said, oh no, she's such a wonderful speaker, she's so strong, why didn't Barack Obama pick her as his running mate? But there were really clear, very practical reasons why he didn't do that. One is the comfort level. The two do not see eye to eye, even though they may now respect each other after the campaign. He needed somebody who was with him on the issues. He also couldn't afford to have a big distraction to his run for the White House, and that comes with Bill Clinton. You know, the two-for-one aspect of the Clinton partnership was going to be a problem for any president, and it certainly was going to be an even bigger one for Barack Obama after such a bruising campaign.
And Americans are fortunate that Joe Biden will be at Barack Obama's side. The economic stresses here at home and the strategic challenges abroad. He's pregnant.
Today we're going to see this sort of second act of this unity project, and that comes with Bill Clinton giving his primetime address to the Democratic Convention. Bill is going on stage just a bit before Joe Biden. He's the vice president, but both those speeches are really going to be watched. Joe Biden, I think people are going to find out tonight, is a formidable speaker. He's really got heart and passion when he speaks, and he's known for ripping up the floor. He's a guy, he's going to lead the charge against John McCain. He's going to go on the attack. That's the traditional role of the vice president. But Joe Biden is somebody who can do that not only as a battering ram. He can use humor, he can use sarcasm, and I think we're going to see him mixing it up and really putting in a star turn.
That was Suzanne Goldenberg reporting from Denver, and we'll be hearing more from the convention later in this podcast. For all the latest analysis from the States, you can click on guardian.co.uk/US elections 2008. Elsewhere on The Guardian's website today, can Arsenal and Liverpool make it through to the Champions League group stages? Follow all the minute-by-minute action from 7:30pm at guardian.co.uk/football. Joanna Moorhead on how first-time mothers should be trusted to know whether they want a natural birth. Find that at guardian.co.uk/comment is free. And Lost for Words, a guide to the top 10 most endangered languages. That's at guardian.co.uk/books. Author Salman Rushdie has received an apology in court from a former police bodyguard. The false claims made by Ron Evans, an ex-police driver in the book On Her Majesty's Service, included an assertion that Rushdie had bad relations with his police team. The publisher has now destroyed the first run of 4,000 copies of the book and is correcting two chapters. In a moment, we'll hear from Guardian reporter Helen Pidd, who's been following the case. But first, here's how Salman Rushdie responded to the verdict.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the end of the matter. I think it was never my desire to seek any kind of financial reward from this, but simply to have it established that the truth is the truth and that lies are lies. And I'm happy to have nailed that. And I hope in some ways that maybe this device of the Declaration of Falsehood will serve as another way of pursuing these matters. Instead of just going for megabytes, you simply go to court for the important thing, which is to establish what's true and what's not. You know? And I think that's it's a clearer and simpler way of dealing with this. And I'm very pleased that we've been able to use it in this way.
Salman Rushdie outside court. Well, Guardian reporter Helen Pitt has been following the case, has been in court as well. I mentioned one false claim earlier, but there were quite a lot of colourful other false claims too. Talk us through those.
Yeah, well, in total, there were 11 revelations about Salman Rushdie's home life and also his wife. One of the claims were that the protection officers got so fed up with him one evening that they locked him in a cupboard so they could go out to the pub, for example. They accused him of being unhygienic. They called him Scruffy as his nickname. Ron Evans, the author of the book, also suggested that Salman Rushdie's wife, Elizabeth West, his third wife, only married him for his money.
And all those claims have been thrown out as false, haven't they? Interestingly enough, Rushdie is not seeking financial compensation. How unusual is that in a case like this?
I don't know if it's absolutely unprecedented, but it's certainly unusual. And his QC, Jeffrey Robertson, yesterday said it was pioneering. And it meant that the case could come to court very quickly. It's only a month since the allegations were first aired. Usually these things drag on for months and months and months. So it just meant, you know, stand up in court. Yeah, we got it wrong. Fine, everybody's happy, off you go.
And the book itself, 4,000 copies have been destroyed. They've had to correct two chapters. What's left of it now?
Well, according to the publisher's, the blurb on the publisher's website, quite a lot. He had a long career with the police, and he says he was involved in protecting everybody from Claire Short when she visited Pakistan, and right up to sort of Bill Clinton and other figures like that. So there may be some other juicy allegations. Who knows if anybody will sue over them?
We'll just have to wait and see. Helen Pidd reporting there. I'm Claire Catford. Still to come in today's Guardian Daily, how buying shares in a band can help boost their success.
When I thought of it, I couldn't understand why nobody had done it before. The only thing I did come across was Marillion pre-selling their album, which was not an investment, but it was a way of pre-buying the album.
And mini Obama merchandise on every corner in Denver. We check it out.
T-shirts, caps, flags, buttons. Right here, Obama Store, USA.
But first,
Drugs are being smuggled onto British streets by gangs using new routes through West Africa and Europe, according to a top intelligence officer. Rob Wainwright from the Serious and Organised Crime Agency says that Britain is increasing the number of officers to try and stop the trade. I asked The Guardian Spain correspondent, Graham Keeley, who's in Barcelona, how these smuggling routes have changed.
Essentially, the majority of drugs, particularly cocaine, was reaching Britain via Spain and Portugal. However, in recent months, what has changed is that because of a concerted effort between law enforcement agencies in Europe, these gangs, particularly based in Latin America, have been forced to change their routes and to get the drugs into Europe via West Africa, which is a more roundabout way. But this appears to be the only way that they seem to feel they can reach Europe.
An increasing trend as well is that they are bringing cocaine by aircraft instead of by boat, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Previously, it was large shiploads concealed in trawlers, very highly organised operations. But these were being increasingly infiltrated by law enforcement agencies like the British Serious Organised Crime Agency. So what the gangs are doing now is bringing the drugs in from Latin America into Western Africa in by air. And then from there, it's either brought up through Africa, and then again, it does another small hop, again by air, into places like Spain and other parts of Europe.
How likely is it that we're going to possibly see unwitting or possibly British tourists who are aware of the drug situation and trying to make money out of it, bringing drugs from Spain to the UK?
Well, we've had already one case of a couple of British women who were detained in Ghana earlier this year with some quantity of drugs. And so it may be the case that tourists to Latin America become persuaded to bring shipments of drugs over via Western Africa and up northwards into Europe, possibly Britain. It may be an increasing trend.
Is this also happening because of a change in the way the drug cartels work, in the sense that they are a lot smaller than they used to be and therefore they have to find new routes?
Well, it's mainly because there's far more international cooperation between drug cartels in different countries. For instance, one senior officer from SOCA, Rob Wainwright, told me that essentially they work as a kind of international chamber of commerce, be it a criminal one, working together to bring the drugs, say, from Latin America to Europe. It symbolises the kind of globalisation of the drugs industry, if you like.
And you can find out more about that story at guardian.co.uk/crime. Now, music could be the new venture capital, as more and more fans are being encouraged to buy shares in up-and-coming bands. The music execs behind the Kaiser Chiefs and Primal Scream are backing Bandstock, which is a brand-new website that will allow music fans to invest in a new act or new acts. Andrew Lewis is the founder of Bandstock, and he explained how it would all work.
As an artist, you can go onto the bandstocks.com website and submit a project. Because we don't want to use the web as a way of filling it up with completely unlistenable music, there is a filter process, so we will listen to the demos that are submitted, and if we think that they're viable, we'll put them on the website. The first phase is a voting phase, so democracy at that point takes over, and if enough people like the music, then it moves into what we call the investment stage, where we launch a formal offer. It's approved by all of the relevant authorities, and it's a proper opportunity to invest in what we call band stocks, which is a form of loan stock. So if, for example, we're trying to raise a fund of £100,000 to record and market an album, we would sell 10,000 £10 band stocks. We make that offer, and then it's over to the fans and the band's rich uncles to make their investment. We raise the fund. The artist records the music. We're there to help. We provide a sort of infrastructure. And then the record is eventually made and distributed. We have a distribution deal with the leading independent distributor that's responsible for most of the very best independent music, such as White Stripes and Arctic Monkeys, Oasis even.
And it's a kind of form of assisted DIY. We'll do everything that to, you know, enable an artist to achieve as much success as they can possibly achieve.
Increasingly, the music industry is trying to find new ways to make money. They don't seem to have as much money to invest. So is this a way of, if you like, allowing bands who are trying to make it big or trying to get some kind of support to start on the first rung?
It's partly that. The music industry has become sort of an increasingly frustrating place for artists because the commercial necessities that drive it mean currently that to be really properly viable for a major record company, you probably have to sell about 250,000 albums, which is a hell of a lot of albums, especially on the first time round. So I think, are there to fulfill a need to allow artists to engage directly with fans and to do some of the development that there really hasn't been happening and currently can't happen with the economics of the music business as they are.
Fan-funded albums are not exactly a new idea. Is there a twist to yours that makes it very different from the ideas that have been tried in the past?
Yeah, it was a new idea when I thought of it about 4 years ago, and then unfortunately it took me rather longer than anticipated to get all the details right. I think when I thought of it, and I couldn't understand why nobody had done it before, the only thing I did come across was Marillion doing pre-selling their album, which was not an investment, but it was a way of pre-buying the album. Since then, I'm aware of two other websites that have launched, and what we've really tried very hard to do is to work within the music business and to provide a model that actually works for artists that have a choice and can get deals. And I think that's really what differentiates our model from the other couple that are out there that I am aware of.
Andrew Lewis, the founder of Bandstock, new ways to support bands and maybe boost your bank balance at the same time. Now, success, a good story. Double gold medal winner Rebecca Addington got a hero's welcome on her return to Mansfield in Nottinghamshire, her hometown. She is the first British swimmer in 100 years to win two Olympic gold medals. She was then driven in a gold Rolls-Royce to an open-top bus, and The Guardian's Martin Wainwright was there.
I've just come to Sherwood Bus, where Rebecca did her initial training and, in fact, learnt to swim. It's closed today, but I found two local ladies who were just telling me that you've swum here, you've brought your family here in the past.
Yeah, my eldest daughter's had lessons there previously.
Do you see either of them as a future Rebecca Addington?
I think they're inspired now. They do have lessons elsewhere now, but they are inspired.
I've come to Becky's actual road, which I think is normally called Rydale Avenue.
That's right, yes.
But you've renamed it. They've stuck a sign over the street sign, so it now says Addington Avenue. And I've just come to the first house on the road, which is wonderfully decorated, as most of the houses are, with Union Jacks and big sign saying, "Congratulations, Rebecca."
Yes.
And do you know her?
Well, we've been aware that she was on her way to the Olympics for quite a while now and kept our eye on her.
Good.
But I don't think we really expected it this time. No. We were expecting medals in 2012.
It's very nice how Mansfield's really turning out for her. I mean, I've just come through the town and it's already filling up.
Yes.
Is that something that's kind of developed over the last 3 weeks?
Yes, after she'd got the first gold, we saw banners going up, flags going up, and then, of course, she got the second one and all the media have been round, so that's fired people's enthusiasm as well. She's very genuine. The neighbours went round when we knew she was arriving home, and even though she'd just been on a flight from China and then press conferences, she still stayed on the street signing autographs for children. She was very genuine, very happy to do it. She didn't say, "Stop, I've had enough." You know, she stayed there until everybody started to leave.
This is the Market Square in Mansfield, where people are getting ready to welcome Rebecca in about an hour and a half's time. I've just been talking to various Union Jack sellers, none of whom are from Mansfield. They've all moved. I think one at least is from London and others are from further afield, who've come to sell their Union Jacks. They're doing quite well. And I'm just going in search of what used to be Young's Wine Bar, which has been given a new name. Guess what?
The Addington Arms.
I've heard some people say that Mansfield should be renamed Addington. What do you think about that?
That's just silly now, isn't it?
Don't you approve?
Yeah, I like Addington.
Becky's on her way now in her golden Rolls-Royce from her home at Berry Hill, which is about a mile outside the centre of Mansfield, and there's quite a big crowd gathered outside the Civic Centre, which is where the bus is going to leave. The bus is parked up saying, "Rebecca Addington, the pride of Mansfield," covered in balloons and streamers. Here she is, getting out of the car now. The mayor's shaking her hand, Terry Egginton. Huge shouts from the crowd now before she goes into the Civic Centre. The mayor's going to hand over the gold Jimmy Two Shoes. Thank goodness, they're in an enormous box. Have you got any thoughts about, you've inspired young people here very much. Do you think you might do anything further in the future to help young people from this part of the world take up sports?
I hope so. Like, I think London's just going to be an amazing opportunity just for kids to get involved in sport, not necessarily swimming, just any sport is just a great thing to do. Even if you just have fun with it, you don't have to go on to be professional. It's just about getting involved in sport and doing something.
From guardian.co.uk, this is Guardian Daily.
Here we go, everybody. We got your Obama gear right here. Come on over. If we don't have it, we can get it. Caps, flags, buttons. Right here, Obama Store, USA. T-shirts, $20. 2 for $30. Buttons, $2. Step right up. Here we go, Obama, Obama. Yes, we can.
I'm Ben Green here in Denver for the Democratic National Convention, where I'm taking a bit of a breather from the Hillary Clinton sideshow and all the talk of politics inside. I've come to take a look round and see just what people are selling out here. There's tons of noise, there are tons of people selling all sorts of Obama branded tat, anything you want, as long as it's about $10 or so. But I've been walking around trying to find some of the other non-Obama gifts that people are selling in the name of politics.
My name is AJ Bontempo, I'm one of the co-founders of the Change Room. It's a pocket accessory, that denim accessory, and it's what it is it has a Delta symbol. So we wanted to create something that wasn't a T-shirt or a pin. So it's a symbol for change, if you remember, with the Delta in math class. We wanted to create something for the youth in more of a hip way to show your support for change or for Barack Obama's message of change. We sell them 2 for $20. It's $19.99 for two because you can't buy one. It's about giving. So it's all about giving and trying to pass it around the country.
I'm Daniel James Hudson, the president of Yao Company, which is a Chinese medical group that developed the supplement Altigen, which is to offset the negative side effects of hypoxia found at our altitude here.
So if I have, if I take your supplement, well, how am I going to feel?
Well, the supplement's designed to better optimize your body's ability to utilize oxygen. It's meant to help with some of the minor to major side effects like headache, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, lethargy, these sorts of things.
And are you selling this at the Republican convention as well? Because a lot of those symptoms, I'm guessing, will be quite common out there for people who are attending here.
We don't oppose any individual who might find this beneficial, Republican, independent, or otherwise.
My name is Joan McWilliams, and I'm the author of The Peace Finder, Riley McPhee's Quest for World Peace. It shows people how to create world peace one person at a time.
And I see you're selling chocolate as well to
and
go
we
with
have
it.
Chocolate, and would you like some?
I'll take some chocolate, thank you very much. It is chocolate with the world on the side, and this is, if I eat this, will I bring peace and happiness to mankind?
If you eat that and you start thinking peace, you're in.
I'm Cliff Burns from Castle Rock, Colorado. We own the Rocky Mountain Meat Company. We have some of the best sausage in the United States, we think.
And if Barack Obama himself were to turn up to your store and say, I want a hot dog, what would you give him?
I think I would recommend the German White Brat or the Spicy Cajun, depending on whether he likes spicy or mild. I think we'd probably want to serve him one of those two. Those are great sausages.
And I guess this is where you say, only in America.
Well, that's it for today's edition of Guardian Daily. Tomorrow's will be available to download from 7:30 a.m. Producing today, Andy Duckworth. I'm Claire Catford. Thank you for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.